the data drop. This here is a nail in the coffin for that little puke. How do we get it to her? Who can play messenger?
A Jarl, he says. She is set to speak before them tomorrow morning. They slumber in eagle rest.
Thought security was a little weird. Braves I didn't recognize. What's her speech for?
An ambassador from the Republic is on his way. Xenophon has arranged a peace summit.
Uh-huh. I raise an eyebrow. Having just been with the Republic, I very much doubt that. They don't buy this far story. Think Sephi's lost a bleeding mind. No, Jarls. Xenophon's got the playing field stacked.
The Skugi,
he says in sudden epiphany. I knew he'd get there.
They bear Freyhild's death as grievously as Valdir. They can be trusted.
He sighs.
But they cannot gain audience. Her Valkyrie are loyal and will never turn against her word. I could not put Skugi against Valkyrie. Only evil grows of that.
Agreed. I was thinking they could help us liberate an old blood-stained friend.
Unshorn,
he murmurs in obvious fear. Now you're catching on, old boy. Osgard waits for me in the same hangar where I trained the Skugi and later shot three of them in the face. He wears his crow feather cloak, his dragon bone staff, his red scale boots, and his great 14-point elk horn headdress, tips crusted in the blood of his people's enemies. It was a mighty fine sight seeing him try to squeak out that perforation in the pulse shield outside his window with all that luggage in tow. But what Osgard might lack in finesse, he more than compensates for in loyalty. He doesn't wait alone. Fetched from their barracks by Osgard, 80 of my Skugi spirit warriors surround the rotund shaman. Gudkind stands as their leader. They eye me with no small amount of distrust and wariness, especially the ones I shot, but Osgard called them here so they listen. Hello, you ugly sods. My name is Ephraim T. Horn, I drawl as I waltz before them in my scarab skin. I was once the greatest freelancer in all Hyperion, which means I am the greatest freelancer who ever lived. But then I met you pukes. You dogged, creepy assassins of the icy poles have warmed the cockles of my reptilian heart. I ain't your people. You ain't mine. Let's get that out of the way. In fact, I think you're damn weird and you think I'm a money slut. Fine. I could give a tick's dick what you think of me, but your queen. I pause. Our queen needs our help. The prison of the old tribe was inherited from the Bologna. It stands lonely and arcane on the far eastern fringe of Eagle Rest, connected to the great citadel by means of an anorexic little bridge with room for no more than two obsidians to stand abreast. With thousands of obsidian blood braves asleep in their barracks, Osgard waltzes through the fog that grips the bridge towards six armoured Valkyrie guards. One is Braga, Pax's bodyguard.
Shaman, Braga shouts, you are not free to roam. Where are Ulfred and Ulra?
Or something like that, in Nergal. He presses forward.
Shaman, halt! Braga!
He calls in a voice that is not frail Osgar's, but possessed with the myth of the shaman he built to rise nearly to the top of the matriarchy.
I knew thee as a child. Did you not listen as you sat upon my knee? Doom visits those who shed the blood of the servants to the gods.
We are in service of the queen,
Braga rumbles in irritation.
And even she serves the gods,
he replies, continuing forward.
It is not the duty of a servant to blind themselves to truth. It is the duty of a servant to understand the will of the master, especially when the master does not. Our queen has been deceived. Hollow words, perhaps they always were,
Braga calls, lowering her pulse rifle. Her sisters do the same.
Our queen believes Valdir covets her throne. Bah! He covets only war trophies and a warm cunny. You know this.
The Valkyrie flinch when Osgard lifts his dragon-bone staff.
Strike me, and you will summon the shadows of the mist.
The Valkyrie look back to Braga, seized with apprehension.
Idiots, he's only a storyteller. A drunk storyteller.
Braga holsters her rifle and pulls out her axe, stalking forward to take Osgard into custody. Standing before the armored warrior cloaked in frail feathers, Osgard waves his staff with dramatic flourishes. I begin to laugh. The mist flashes and Braga stumbles back, her breastplate smoking. For the smallest moment, she thinks magic has been conjured. Then experience takes over. Too late. She looks out over the bridge, not expecting an enemy here in the heart of their power.
In the mist,
she shouts as her helmet slithers over her head. The mist stutters with colour. Half the Valkyrie go down before they can activate their pulse shields. As the Skugi emerge from the mist to overwhelm the guards and enter the prison to free Valdir, their jammers go active and I lose the signal. My turn. I activate a jam field and drop from the ceiling to land in front of the two muscular guards outside Xenophon's room. To their credit, the sleepy obsidians don't flinch and run straight into the gravity mine I toss in front of me. They invert and shoot upward, crunching into the ceiling. I lower the intensity and let them float, unconscious. Wait, one's not unconscious. Crunch, a second time into the ceiling. Hang tight, ladies. I reach for the door latch to enter Xenophon's room, when instinct saves me. The latch is charged with enough power to melt my brain. That little shit. I strip my spider gloves, take a canister from my belt and rubberize the scarab skin gauntlets. As the spray sets, I set a tripwire at the far end of the hall, two more gravity mines along the walls, and a gas trap above the door just to be safe. Then, with the resin set, I disarm the laser alarm inside the lock, then the secondary trigger, someone's paranoid, and then the mechanism itself. The door clicks open, the sound contained inside my jam field. Xenophon's room is spartan, except for the size it is suitable for a servant. The white sits facing the fireplace, watching a hologram. The sound is mute outside the perimeter of my jam field. Wary of pressure traps in the threshold, I don my spider gloves again and reach inside the doorframe to crawl up the wall, then the ceiling. Until I'm suspended above him in the shadow of the vaulted ceiling, I turn off my jam field. The white is watching a recorded hologram of a severe man, nearly Sephi's height, but much thinner and full of that tensile gold terror. His face is thin, his eyes perfect crystals behind slanted lids. There's a man who knows pain. Atlas Aura. My heart drops. A beat. Salve, Xenophon. The product of all your toil amongst the flea-bitten is nearly at hand. The asset is hidden within the crags at the coordinates you detailed. He will act only upon your signal, which is to be given only if the greater sum of obsidian warbands are upon Mars. If they are not, postpone incitement. Our window is narrowing, but he will listen. He knows you are my hand. Follow my design and soon you will be home on the Palatine. In a world of protean hearts, your steadfastness does not go unnoticed. When you return to the fold, you will be honored by the dictator with the Iron Pyramid. It will be much deserved. Destroy this message upon receipt. Per aspera ad astra. Per aspera. Ad Astra. Xenophon echoes and then plays the message again. I watch it twice from above. I pieced it together the first time, but it beggars belief. I drop in front of Xenophon and stand amidst the hologram. Those pale eyes go wide and I pistol whip the white in the face. Xenophon sprawls backward,
I kick them between the legs, forgetting nothing's there but a tiny aperture for piss. The slender creature stumbles back, not calling out in pain, not showing a lick of anger upon their face.
Mr. Horn, I did not expect you to return. I knew I was missing a crucial factor.
With a glance at the door, Xenophon knows the guards have been dispatched. I flick the disabled tracker into their chest. You little rat. You're a fucking Gorgon.
The proper term is pavor nocturnus, a night terror. But colloquialisms do rule the day.
The white folds their hands over their tummy and stands erect and pacific as a priest.
Xenophon, first frumentarius, legio zero, pavor nocturnus, at your service.
And a frumentarius? I should have guessed it was one of you psychos. Special forces spy. The kind that could end even a centurion's career with a keystroke. I'd put a canyon in their face if I didn't want to watch Seffi do it herself. Seffi will love tearing you to ribbons.
I imagine she would. Ever has she feared the Gold Masters. She was wise to fear them. They know all. Of course, I knew it was a risk to keep the message. In 60 years, it is the only order I have ever refused. But even I grow weary in the cold isolation of my duty.
Xenophon gestures to my gun.
Must you threaten? A little redundant, considering your skill set. I've little chance against you. Though, if I call the guard, they would pull you apart like cake.
My eyes dart to the door.
You're wondering what to do? This evidence is incriminating, I agree, but two death sentences are hardly worse than one, and I hear you already have mine in your belt pouch. A holo of the incriminating variety?
I shove the gun against the white's forehead. How do you know that?
It is my purpose to know.
It's a bluff. The Skoogee hate the creep. They'd never rat me out. They need time, and I need answers. I jerk my head at the hologram. You've been that bastard's mole for years, since Seffi brought you in?
Yes.
Then it wasn't that poor Pink who was supposed to kill her?
Oh, no. Amel certainly was an assassin. The peril of current affairs, I fear. Many goals pulling strings against one another, causing all to fray. I detected him quite early. But when Atalantia activated him, it was necessary to expose him.
The hell are you doing here if not to kill Seffi, then?
Death is sloppy, and my Dominus does not abide sloppy. With a dead queen, the Obsidians would seek the strongest to lead them. Who is stronger to them than the Morning Star? Valdir? He loves Darrow. It would do little good to the society for the Slave King to be bestowed with such a gift. Seffi must die the proper way, at the proper time, on the proper planet, with her people along the proper trajectory. For that, only a frumentarius would suffice.
And Volsung Far?
But another piece of the puzzle,
Xenophon considers, enjoying this little bout of honesty.
Perhaps more. Dominus O'Ra learned much in his banishment to the Kuiper Belt after his indiscretions, not the least of which was the impossibility of his task in subduing the Ascomani there. Octavia sent him to die, he soon realized. A fact I witnessed firsthand. I remained behind as his factor, and saw her appoint another fear knight in his absence, one Darrow easily dispatched of. The second thing my master learned was that the Ascomani couldn't be conquered from without, only from within. Ironic enough. So he left his most cherished Gorgon amongst them, not to destroy them, but to rise amongst them.
Keep him talking. Let Osgard get Valdir.
They may already be en route to Sephi. Keep the little bastard's mouth here, where it can't do any talking in Sephi's ear. He who walks the void was a Gorgon, I ask.
Is a Gorgon. The master called him the most talented of that martial breed. Grimace was good to loan him to us.
The white's lips make a thin line as it attempts a smile.
You are a clever homo bellicus, Mr. Horn, as I am an efficient homo logicus. But do not compare yourself with the best of the homo orient. My Dominus's designs are painted on a horizon we will only see in time. My science is logic, his is illogic, humanity. The Ra are emotion, you see. They come for the Republic to repay old debts. But there is hubris in their blood. Thinking themselves fresh to the tired fray, they will find themselves undone. With one stroke, my master fells three.
I check my six. No one is behind me. Yet Xenophon's bragging like the guns to my head. Maybe it is. Maybe all I've felt, all I've seen, is part of this little game the White and his master cooked up. Sephi the Skoogie, Valdir, Freyhild, Osgard are all just wriggling as a snake chokes the life from us. I want to scream in frustration. I thought I was being the hero. I'm just the fool in their game. But maybe I can stop it. Tell Sephi. Find a way to unwind all this and let her dream continue on its course.
Why did you come back? Xenophon asked.
Couldn't stand to see a little shit ruin something good, I say. Been there, done that. World's better off without the likes of you and me.
I understand the conflict you feel.
Nah, you really don't. Xenophon thinks for a moment.
You cannot stop this. The reason I tell you all this is to disabuse you of that delusion of grandeur. You are small, as am I. But you can be a part of something, Mr. Horn, a part of the solution to this dark age.
The White's voice quickens.
When you first arrived, I thought you were a liability, and you were, thanks to that meddling shaman. The conquest of Cimmeria was meant to be a massacre led by Valdir. Millions of Reds were to die. They were to flock to the Red Hand, which was to carve Valkland from the inside and pit the Obsidians against the people and each other. So that when Far came, it would be as savior. Instead, he must come as terror.
Let me guess. You needed the children on Luna, not here. Poor Fear Knight. His syndicate stooges didn't get to play with their toys.
They were upset, baying for your blood, as those cretins would. I could have killed you with a nerve agent in your wine, in your food, as you slept at any time. But I saved you. I convinced my master of your utility. You, more than any other, jeopardized his plans. On accident, of course. Still, he knows this. He respects this. He desires you in Zero Legion.
Me? A Gorgon? Don't make me laugh. This dog don't collar.
He does not wish to give you a collar. He offers you opportunity. The Obsidians never knew how to use your skills, never respected what you are, the greatest infiltrator of an age. Yet you came here to save them. You crave something that will be loyal to you, so you can be loyal to it. Join us.
And help us bring order back to mankind. Is humanity better off than it was 10 years ago?
The irrevocable answer is no. Become a shepherd. Become a savior.
Humanity isn't an it. Xenophon sighs.
You stall for time because you are recording me and think I don't know about your prison break.
I go cold. My finger grazes the trigger.
You mock me because I am different, but I have always respected you. I see the rigors of your training, the loss of your husband, how you float adrift and search for meaning.
These savages only respect you for what you have given them, skill gift, the mines, amusement. Do you so easily forget the violations they have reaped upon your race? How they conspired to use Volga? They are monsters. Seffi isn't a monster, I say. She wants something different for her people. It ain't a clean world, but she's trying to do right by them, by Mars. You greasy little larva, are trying to rob that from them. No, they will rob themselves. You will see. It is in their nature, as duty is in ours. Xenophon's eyes flick over my head. Nakata, hold. I turn to see three lanky monsters, with crowns equal parts metal, asteroid and diamond fused to their skulls, perched on a windowsill. Two more, barely taller than children, with huge skulls, thick, long, ape-like arms and stunted legs, swing through a second window. Azkamani. Not the rabid offshoots of the Iceborn, but aliens 500 years separated from the human genome and mutated by radiation. Their eyes are huge and black as their hair, their foreheads pronounced like proto-humans, their noses little more than nostrils. They hold weird, twisted weapons, their skin thick as hide and ribbed with ritual scarring and metal implants is the deep red of a Bordeaux fortified sangria. What the fuck? Mr. Horn, they will not attack you unless I command them. Xenophon steps back from me, fingering something concealed in a sleeve. My reaction is all instinct. I snap the gun up and shoot the closest, stubby one in the face, then shoot at the largest of the three at the window. I miss as they vault to the ceiling like gymnasts. I point the gun at Xenophon. I can't win this fight, no matter how much I want to shoot Xenophon in the head. The long play is the only way. Xenophon pulls a controller from his sleeve and twists a dial. That must be for the heart spike. I play along, spasming and falling to my knees as if suffering a heart attack. Xenophon spins the dial more, likely to render me unconscious. I play dead. But, shittily, one of the Azkamani decides to kick me in the head for his dead friend. And everything goes dim. I wake on stone amidst a distant roar of voices. A newly carved stone griffin glares down at me from the ceiling hundreds of meters overhead. I'm in the private chamber of Seffi's newly appointed throne room, my hands bound behind my back by magnetic cuffs. Still in my scarab skin, though stripped of all my gear, Osgard blinks beside me. Seffi stands above me. Xenophon is all I manage, still woozy from the blow to my head. Why? She asks, her face cold to me. I welcomed you when the world wanted you dead. I gave you Aeta. Why try to install Valdir in a coup? I didn't. Speaking is like trying to form castles out of dry sand. I want to tell her I respect her, that I came back to help, that I may not be Aeta, but I believe in her, in what she stands for. But all that trickles out is Volsungfar, the Fear Knight. Come on, brain, work. His master, Xenophon says from her side, concealed hands twisting the dial on my heart spike. I try to fake a spasm, but I feel like I'm going to puke from the concussion anyway. After delivering the children to the Fear Knight, his orders were to create chaos. I warned you about him. Yes, you did, Xenophon. You did. She looks on me in sorrow and then spits in my face. We are not monsters, Mr. Horn, but our mercy is not infinite. Skin him and the fraud and hang them from the tower.
Azkamani, I grunt. If I may suggest he witness your speech, so as he hangs, he can know the unity of Obsidians in the face of his schemes.
Very well, he says, and walks off.
I'm dragged by my hair with a bloody Osgard into Griffin Hall. Morning sunlight filters through high windows. Nearly 600 war jarls, all the chieftains of the tribe Sefi united into one, cluster before the giant ice throne. I've never seen them fully assembled, and until now didn't realize how even Valdir showed signs of the encroachment of modernity. More than half of the leaders are stark savages. They wear bones in their hair and hilarious, ostentatious signs of wealth pillaged from planets. Gold chains, ruby-hilted axes, breastplates studded with diamonds. They have tattooed faces, fur cloaks, trophies of war brought out from the pristine confines of their bounty chests to flash their tail feathers to the other war jarls. Most are women, though a minority of taller men not together. Alone, the 600 fill barely a fraction of the cavernous chamber. Two thick columns of obsidian honor guard, mostly high-ranking men from the tribes, stretch all the way to the Bellona doors. There must be thousands. Silence falls on the jarls as Sefi stalks up to her throne, where 24 of Sefi's Valkyrie women form wings to either side. I'm tossed with Osgard on the floor at the far end of the dais. "Osgard," I mutter, managing to crawl to my knees. He's flat on the floor, his broken hands bound behind him. His lone eye blinks at me. "Oh boy, the Skugi. Dead. Most. They were waiting for us as we left. Valdir broke through."
"Escaped?"
"I know not."
His mouth twists in despair.
"I know nothing."
His eye turns to Sefi, who stands before her throne. I reach for my right heel with my hand and find the sealant there intact. I still have my last play.
"They're here," I murmur.
"The Askamani." A Valkyrie hits my ear to silence me.
"Your heart beats for war?"
Sefi bellows to her chieftains in Nagal. The acoustics of the room work in her favor. The jarls pound their axe hafts on the ground.
"War is what you desire. But against who? The Republic? The Gauls? This Volsungfar? Ourselves? Are we savages who bay for war like dogs?"
She glares at them.
"Ragnar didn't die for war. He died for the future of the Volk. Many of you cannot see past your axes. War is our blood, yes, but no people can war against all. You know of the treason that bathed these halls last night in blood. My own mate, whose name is forgotten to us, thought I was too weak to face our enemies. Behold his conspirators."
At her order, the Valkyrie drag the skinned bodies of the Skugi and throw them down the stairs of the dais to splay like grisly, giant fetuses. I choke down vomit. I can't even recognize any of them. First Freyhild, now everyone else. Here I am again, the teacher of corpses. "I never should have left you, Volga. I never should have left."
"Am I weak?"
Sefi whispers. I see the hatred in her eyes for herself, for caving in the end to the cruel ways of her people. So much for progress, so much for the future. The jarls eat up the violence. They slam their axes and laugh. I work my hand on the heel, trying to break the sealant.
"This Volsungfar, this barbarian king, put fear into Valdir's heart. But not mine. I know what he is, a vulture. He came to our land thinking it his, but he is no more one of us than we are gold. This land belongs to the Volk. We purchased it with our blood. While he lurked in the asteroids beyond the rim,
We broke the might of gold, the machines of silver. Now he comes a thief in the night to murder Freyhild. May she feast in Valhalla to claim with heretical tongue, there is no all-mother, only an all-father.
He spits the word, and the jarls stomp their axes in fury.
He is our enemy, a heretic. I will drink from his skull before the moons grow full.
They roar.
All know the wisdom of Baldur. It is not wise to fight an enemy with another at your back. This heretic king has poisoned the blood between our republic brothers and sisters. Today we cleanse that blood. Tomorrow we turn our axes on him.
She lifts the razor of Aja and points it to the Bellona doors, sparing a nod for Xenophon, who must have arranged this. I know in my belly what's coming. Xenophon stares at the doors with intense contentment. They say the Hall of Eagles wasn't built to reach the heavens, but to fit its doors. The famed Bellona doors, the last great treasure of House Bellona, not sold off by looters or sculpted by the obsidians in their own image, begin to open, formed from the trunks of two of the tallest god trees ever grown. The interlocking wooden wings that close off the eastern facade of the hall are pulled open by infernal machines. Raw, rusted iron clatters and rattles now, as it used to for the damn Bellona family, so that they could sit in their pretty armor and remember the horrors of war, as if it wasn't the definition of their own name. The chanting of the crowd gathered in the city to protest the All Tribes' looming war with the Republic flows in. They chant for their Reaper. How far away he must seem. On the floor, a long needle of daylight splits the obsidian jarls and stabs toward Sephi's throne, dividing the shadows of the room before widening to melt the shadows away. All except one. As a Republic diplomatic shuttle taxis for landing, it casts a stain on the floor the shape of a bird.
The raven shadow,
Osgard murmurs. I've seen men snap during bombardments. Like a physical switch has been thrown, and they go manic as an addict. Osgard's switch goes. He bolts to his feet, rushes for Sephi, frothing for her to shoot down the ship, to not let it spew out its evil. He's knocked windless on the ground before he can even make it four steps. The sealant on my heel won't come off, damn it! Blood leaks out Osgard's mouth and pools on the floor like cherry syrup as he's dragged back to me. He stares at his reflection. I whisper his name. He's straight gone. Snapped at the mental waste. He doesn't even look up as the ramp of the Republic shuttle bangs down at the far end of the room. I wait for a bomb to go off in the shuttle, for some horrible weapon to evaporate the gathered host of obsidians. But the Fear Knight has something more intricate in store. His slave, Xenophon, walks from the place of honor at Sephi's side, down the stairs of her throne dais, nearly to the end of the ranks of obsidian war jarls. Sephi Volaris, are you a god? Xenophon asks. Her brows knit together in confusion. Are you a god? Sephi's taken aback at the impertinence of her only loyal servant. Her voice comes out in an annoyed growl. Xenophon, return to your place? No. The jarls murmur in discontent. Sephi stands. Servant, obey. I obey only one, and you are not him, Xenophon replies. The Valkyrie bodyguards take a predatory step forward. Even Sephi's competitors amongst the war jarls seem on the verge of breaking the uppity white's neck. Faced with something she doesn't understand,
Seffi reverts to what she knows. The blood of Ragnar Valerius runs through these veins, she says to the question. Kneel on your knees or on stumps, I care not. The blood of Ragnar Valerius, Xenophon crows. The blood of a god. Alia was no god. She let the children of the spires languish in chains. She sold her sons to the stars for her own gain. From what wellspring, then, does Ragnar derive his divinity? If not from his mother, then it must be from his father. The room goes still in bafflement. Xenophon raises that crystal-clear voice and suddenly lurches, as if possessed by an evil spirit, like a shaman, to sing in flawless Nagal. There was one mightier for All-Mother's reign. All-Father, King of Stains, was his name. For him, old Kuthul rose against Sunborn, till in Ladon was he felled, for kin to mourn to the fires his people and of Volk were sent, but not all to ash and bone must we lament. From sun to dust did the moons and dragons chase the brood of Kuthul, who hid in darkest space. 5 ages passed of shadow and ice, entombed in floating caverns, hunted like rabid mice. Blossoms of blood and thrones of flesh were grown, as brother ate brother, sister ate sister, for a saviour all father groaned. Then came the Outlander to answer his plea. Mighty were the lords of ink, mightier was he. Whores of their children, shards of their thrones made he, who crowned himself with their bones and fashioned dark wind of those not destroyed to serve, to anoint, to proclaim, he who walks the void. May I present to the Volk of the Heartlands the breaker of the black thrones of Ultima Thule, master of the flesh chain, bow-maker of Karan, overlord of the Kuiper belt and Urt cloud, terror of Kodavan and Ra, taker of Marke Marke, Haumia, Zena, Eris, Volsung, great far of the Ascomani, emperor of the Obsidian, and brood father of Ragnar Volarus. Silence. And then he comes. Chapter 76. Ephraim, he who walks the void. The first sound is 3,000 obsidian onagars raising their ceremonial axes and taking the fighting stance to a war cry. The war jarls turn to see the threat. Behind their turned heads, Seffi looks no taller, no stronger, no more confident than a 5-year-old child. Horror, hope, fear, and confusion all muddle together in a grotesque expression, then vanish, leaving only the icy, intelligent mask of Seffi the Quiet. I just don't think Seffi the Quiet will be enough. The second sound is metal on stone. 2 armored boots stomp down the corridor. Even from the side of the dais, I can see his huge helmet over the tallest guards. It's made of the skull of some exotic beast. Triple-horned, fused with asteroid metal and sparkling with diamonds, rubies, and emeralds. The third sound is the scraping of a long metal chain that he drags in one hand. Dozens of abnormally large skulls hang from the metal, Ascomani kings. In the other, he hefts a bizarre spear saw over his shoulder. 2 dozen male jarls of the Old Tribe follow him out of the shuttle, instead of the true face of the beastly horde he leads. The fourth sound is an ululation from his metal throat, like the wail tin makes when it warps in windstorms. The song carries him to the end of the guard corridor, where a wall of Valkyrie bodyguards stand at the base of Sephi's dais. Whoever this man is, he couldn't be the father of Ragnar. It's a lie. A fear knight trick. Kill him. Slag tradition, slag what the war yarls think. Osgard, Osgard, I need your help, I whisper. He stares at Volsung in terror. Osgard, my heel, I need your hand. Even the root-like fingers of his right hand hold more strength than do mine. He doesn't listen. Osgard! Volsung's entourage stops well shy of the throne. But Volsung carries on until Valkyrie block his way. He points his spear at Sephi's throne.
Mine!
He points at her crown.
Mine!
He points at the obsidian jarls.
Mine!
He waves his spear around to encompass Mars.
Mine!
His spear's spiked haft stomps into the stone, breaking Sephi from her trance. She signals her Valkyrie to take him. He rattles the long chain behind him like a snake.
My father, Wagner, is dead, he says. Cut off this impostor's hands and feet. Save his liver for the buzzards and his cock for the dogs.
I cheer inside as three women slip forward in the V to do the dirty work with their axes. Volsung moves like a whip. His spear separates. Its tip lurches forward and pierces through the face of the leftmost woman, coming out the back of her skull, still connected to the haft by some sort of metal wire. Volsung leaves it in and brings the back three quarters of the spear around to smash into the axe guard of the rightmost woman. Something in her shoulder breaks, and she's almost lifted off her feet as she stumbles into the woman in the middle. Bellowing like a maniac, Volsung overwhelms them with savagery. Small teeth on the spear's length begin to saw, and he brings the huge spear down like a hammer in colossal overhand strikes, beating them to their knees, sawing through their armor, and then staving in their skulls in a traumatic display of brute strength. In 10 seconds, the three women make a meat salad on the floor. Oh, fuck. The whole Valkyrie bodyguard raises their rifles to fire on the man. More than 60 of Sephi's war jarls, all men, step forward and make a human wall around Volsung. An ominous silence grips the room as all realize this was planned. Volsung is no stranger to these male chieftains. He must have come to them in secret. When? Before Mars? When they landed? When Valdir, their idol, was arrested? Still, they pretend and shout for him to prove his identity.
I have lived 3 lives. Volsung rumbles through that titanic helmet. Last is that of Volsungfar, the second that of Pale Horse, slave knight to the warlord of Ash, the first that of Wagner Hefgar, first broodmate to Alia Volaris, the Snow Sparrow, queen of the Valkyrie, brood father to the god Ragnar Volaris, and greedy little Sephi.
He removes his helmet. A long tail of hair tumbles from his shaved skull, falling all the way to his heels. The male warriors thrust up their chins and bare their throats in submission, proclaiming him Ragnar's father. The others stare at the length of his valor tail. Even unshorn is a boy to this man. Volsung looks to Sephi, black eyes glittering from eye holes of the tattooed skull of a stained.
Have I so changed beyond the sun, child? Or are you now just a liar like your mother?
He tosses his helmet to the floor. It makes a seismic thump.
Look upon this face.
and say you know it not?
Steffi is shocked dumb.
The father of Ragnar would be over 80. Yet this man, covered with the blood spatter of her Valkyrie, looks barely 50, and moves smooth as any gladiator of the Hyperion Premier Circuit. In the light, he's more than the pale nightmare I saw in the darkness of the ice. His throat must have been ripped out years ago. The front third is metal, the trachea ribbed grey. His arms are bare and obscenely muscular. The left forearm is metal, with a metal hand and dagger-sharp fingernails that look like they extend on sliders. A horrible scar claims half his nose. Blue worm veins of age rejuvenation therapy web the sides of his skull, the first I've ever seen on an obsidian. Even Julii would flinch at the cost.
"My father is dead," Steffi repeats like a mantra.
Volsung reaches under his vest to produce a broken amulet of a griffin. "You will remember this, if not the man who taught you to hunt." He throws it at her. "Your mother broke it in half the day I was taken back to the stars. To be whole again when I returned, 50 years it took. 50 years to hear there was no sky burial for the mother of my pride, Alia. No high mountain tomb for her bones amongst ancient kin. Only a lonely cairn of shattered stone, with half of me lost beneath it."
"You desecrated our sky temple? You slew Freyhild? You spit on the All-Mother? You attacked the Republic?"
Steffi says, her rage playing tug-of-war with her confusion.
"Why?"
"To free you from your chains," he says. "Alia was desecrated."
"Why?"
"Because in your heart you hold the truth. What good is a mother who sells her children? What good is a mother who harvests her young? What good is a mother who is a liar? No better than the frothing rot of a dead seal."
His voice is clever and evocative, and he mutates its tone like an amused mummer. He's no barbarian browbeating them with strength. He's trained in elocution, far better trained than I managed to make the Scoogie. I recognize the triple beat pivot of the Palatine's Politico school. This is the Fear Knight's asset, his super weapon.
"Under the All-Mother, we were slaves, brothers," he smiles, "sisters. Under the rule of women, our men were sent to the stars to die, while queens sat on thrones and knew the joy of the hunt on the ice." He wheels around, speaking to the honor guard as much as the female-dominated Jarls. "We died in sunborn wars, in their fencing practices, ridden down by horseback or grav boot for sport. In their gambling pits, we were forced to kill our brothers, but never our sisters." He thrusts his huge hands into the air. "These hands have slain seas." He looks down. "Seas of brothers, seas of kin." Steffi has lost control. Volsung conducts like a master. He slowly opens his vest to reveal a body of muscles and scars and metal plates. A thick pattern of identical scars on his back and chest stand out from the rest. Their shape is unmistakably the slave brand of House Grimace. "This flesh has known slavery." He points a finger at Steffi.
What do you know, girl?
He smiles.
Only how to be quiet, it seems.
It isn't only the male jarls who laugh. While the Valkyrie stare in horror, the more numerous honor guard is intrigued. And why not? What he says is true. Most of the men were in the gold legions. Most of them were slaves. Seffi wasn't. What would she know of their horror? Even I note how small she looks, how timid her fierce veteran Valkyrie are to this lone terror. Yet she draws confidence from the movement of the women jarls. Alienated by this man, they drift to make a thick wall of protection for the queen, each representing thousands of braves in the camps around Cimmeria. Yet Seffi is blind. She doesn't see how the words seep into the ears of the 3,000 honor guard. How the men in the room looked at the skinned Skugi, all of which were conveniently male and castrated. Or how Valdir, champion of the male braves, is now branded traitor. It was never about old ways and new. It was always about gender. How could she be so fucking blind? How could I not see it festering? Volsung bares his mangled teeth.
While you were silent, girl, I was a slave. While you struck down your unarmed mother, I conquered the tribes of the Far Ink.
He waves a hand back to the skulls on the chain.
These were their kings. While you let the Heatlanders infect you with weakness, I slew with my war saw those who would not bow. I made cups of their skulls, slaves of their children, and whores of their wives.
He brandishes his spear. The way it glimmers, it must be made of a metal I've never seen.
All I have taken from the death grip of my foes. All you have stolen. From the head of a murdered mother, from the pockets of your noble ally, Tyr Morga.
He taps his forehead in respect.
From the legacy of your god brother, from the strength of your mate, you cannot even kill a drake without your servants. Without others, you are nothing, just a cow who bleats she is queen.
He addresses the obsidians.
Obsidian follows strength. I see strength here,
with weakness held up by her crown.
I issued your queen a challenge, but she hid from me behind you. Brothers, sisters, look upon her. Your queen is an ass, for she leads from the back.
The image of Seffi behind the wall of obsidian jarls now becomes an indictment, a mockery. Barr laughs and speaks directly to the honor guard behind him.
She would have you give up war. She would have you forsake the wind for roofs, your stone and bone heritage, for the soft silk of Heatlanders. She would let their cities suck you dry. She would have you live in their world. I would have them live in ours. From the diamond mines of Kuaur, to the boneyard of Karan, to the black thrones of Ultima Thule, the dark wind of the Old Father gathers to fall on the Heatlands, to claim all for Volkland. Gold had its time in the day. Red faltered, but now we rise.
He turns to Seffi.
But only one can rule. Moo.
He walks back and forth, mooing at her like a cow in mockery.
Badagi, badagi, badagi,
the male war jarls begin to chant. Fight, fight, fight. Many of the honor guard join them. Osgard weeps on the floor. I sag in exhaustion. Seffi should shoot him. I would shoot him if I had a gun. But she is a woman trapped by the ways of her own people. If she shoots Ragnar's father, the all tribe will shatter apart. If she turns down a challenger with a claim, she is not strength, and they will turn on her. If only Valdir were here, she must be thinking. Valdir would wrangle the fools in line. The queen of the obsidians looks at Xenophon in betrayal, then to me and Osgard, and taps her forehead in respect and apology. She peels Aja's razor from her arm, draws her war axe, and steps down from her throne. The obsidians watch father and daughter strip themselves of armor and circle one another barefoot in the center of the hall. Volsung is bare-chested, though his muscles themselves look like armor. He wields his warsaw with both hands. Seffi wears a sleeveless vest of Valkyrie blue. In her left hand spins the razor of Aja, and in her right a great axe. No more words are shared. They meet in a sudden flurry of violence that rattles my bones. Seffi bounds backward, more agile than the huge man, but not by much. She hops foot to foot, probing, sliding, and lashing forward. She is a spirit of the ice, nearly Valdir's match by the reckoning of the dozens of gulls she sent to the void. But Volsung ignores the blades and recklessly thrusts at her heart with his warsaw, forcing her to turn her attack into a defense. He is old and has maybe lost a step, but he's cunning, and Seffi knows it. The recklessness was a trap to lure her into baiting him, and Seffi barely twists her heart out of the way as his blade scrapes along her ribcage. She spins back, but smelling blood, Volsung comes on like a bloody storm. Screaming at the top of his lungs, he goes berserker, hammering at the razor and axe as if he intends to chop them to splinters. He uppercuts with the hooked, piercing end of his warsaw. Seffi deflects with her razor, lifts her left leg, and sidesteps to her right. He pivots his spear and brings the saw half crashing down. She catches it with her axe. Veins bulge in his trunk of a neck. Muscles twist in his core, and he pushes down, down, down. Seffi brings the razor around underneath from her left to cut him in half. He pivots the bottom end of the spear diagonal, blocks the razor outward. The metal of both instruments warps as they rebound, hers outward, his inward. He uses the momentum, driving with his legs as he uppercuts with the piercing end toward her opposite leg, ripping a canyon from her mid-calf through the inside tendons of her knee all the way up her inner thigh to her pelvis. Seffi stumbles back, and in six compact thrusts, he punctures both her ankles, her kneecaps, and both her rotator cuffs. She falls like a slack puppet, her axe and razor clattering to the ground. It took less than a minute. Dead silence. I grow nauseous in it. I should have shot Xenophon and died in that room. This can't be happening. Some of the female jarls bolt for the exits. The Valkyrie go berserk, but they are outnumbered and slaughtered. As pulse rifles whine and axes rise and fall in the periphery, Volsung watches his daughter crawl away from him toward her axe, leaving smears of blood on the stone. He stalks after her and stomps on the back of her head until she goes still. He places the axe in her hand and crouches with a knee on her spine to say, "Valhalla bears only the brave. Will you remain quiet in the end, my child?" Volsung straddles his daughter, putting his weight on her tailbone, and sets to grim work. With a knife from his waist, he cuts open her vest to reveal Sefi's tattooed back. In a tender, sawing motion, he carves off two long flaps of flesh from the shoulder blades to the tailbone, exposing her ribcage. She flails like a punctured fish. Then, with a small axe from his hip, Volsung hacks at the ribs on either side of her spine. She jerks in agony, but no sound escapes her. He discards the hatchet and pries open her ribcage from behind to expose her lungs. Tears leak from her eyes. He gasps for air. As peaceful as a man cleaning a fish, Volsung takes a handful of salt from a pouch and throws it on the wounds. Sefi spasms, the muscles of her limbs balling up in cramps. Not one of her war jarls comes to her aid. They watch the Valkyrie being slaughtered without drawing their axes. I grow sick with hate for them, for the betrayal and horror in Sefi's eyes. When Volsung realizes she will not scream, he nods with pride and kneels to dry the tears from her face.
Valhalla will welcome you, child. Go to our fallen who feast. Go to your brother in the Sky Hall. You are freed on All Father's wings.
Tyr, Morka will eat your heart, she rasps.
Perhaps, Volsung whispers, my god is fickle with his favor.
He reaches into her open back with both hands, and knowing the end is here, Sefi shouts with her last breath,
Gir Glarag!
Her words turn to a gurgle as Volsung tears out her lungs and hurls them on the ground. She blinks at them. Her eyes drift closed, and only the tattooed spirit eyes look on. I shut my eyes and hear the crunch and hack of steel on flesh as Volsung continues his work. When I open them again, he has taken her heart. He holds it above him to show the war jarls. Blood sluices down his biceps into the white hair of his armpits.
All Father, he cries out, All Father, I offer you these stains.
It takes him 2 minutes to eat her heart. When he's finished, he shudders in satiation.
Worthy?
Then he grabs Sefi by the ankle, forming a red trail as he drags her up the stairs to the Griffin throne and takes his seat. I seize the moment to crawl toward a fallen Valkyrie. With the angle, I can't free myself from the cuffs, but with her blade, I'm able to pry open the heel of my boot and palm the heart spike packs altered for me. All kneel for their king, except for Osgard, who is allowed to stumble toward the remains of Sefi. He looks at her and finally screams. It's more than a scream. It's a soul. Dying. He falls to his knees in horror at the sight of his queen's ribs, splayed out like bloody wings. Volsung tosses him the knife he used on Sefi. It skitters across the floor to slide to a stop in front of Osgard. But he's no longer Osgard. Spit drips down his lips. His remaining eye is glazed.
A red griffin, wasn't it, Shaman? I have fulfilled your prophecy. Fulfill mine.
As if under a spell, the shaman picks up the blade, turns it around, and buries it into his remaining eye. As what was Osgard weeps on the ground, Volsung takes the razor of Aja into his hand.
700 years of slavery. 700 years of war, 700 years of anguish for them.
Seated on Sefi's throne,
He closes his eyes and the distant roar of the crowd, ignorant of the horror coming for them, laps through the defiled building. "Reaper, reaper, reaper," they chant. Bar opens his eyes. "Sack the city. Take their treasures. Rape their men, their women, their children. Remind them the All-Father's truth. The world is yours if you can take it."
Chapter 77. Ephraim. Worthy. The birds chirp. Early beams of sunlight warm the frosted stone of the plaza at the top of the Bologna stairs. The scent of bonfires and crackling boar meat thickens the air. 2,000 Ascomani feast beside their king as the city trembles with screams. I shall be sitting across from Volga, watching her try to impress Pax. I shall be with my friends, with my Eta. Instead, I suffer the banquet of a beast. I've never been more disgusted with our bipedal species. Was Sephi all that held the monster inside at bay? In the shadow of Griffinhold, airborne obsidians rove in packs, lighting fires with phosphorus bombs, savaging citizens who thought the roofs shelter from the marauding hordes below. Not Ascomani, but the very obsidians who drank and sang in the streets at winter solstice, who shopped in the markets and waved at the Reds who rebuilt their city. I've seen genocide. I saw the jackals' bombs go off. The ghost of the flash stayed burned in my eyes for 2 years. But this is not a flash. It's more human and worse for it. I understand us now. How easy it is to follow a pointing finger. "Have you thought about my offer, Mr. Horn?" Xenophon asks. The white watches the burning city with zero connection. A line of slaves in chains 5 kilometers long stretches toward the former Julii flagship parked south of the city. Will the Republic just watch the rape of Olympia? "I've thought about your offer. At the right price, it could be interesting." The white doesn't believe me as I watch the slaves load into the starship. "Are you aware there is a species of bat on Mercury that begins life as mammalian larva?" I ignore the fool and turn away to look at Far. The odious shit reclines on his throne as brays from the city bring him women one by one to add to his harem. Sephi had more dignity in her little toenail. Xenophon prattles on. "In order for the larva to mature to its destined form, it must find a host to grow inside and then consume when it is ready to fly. Bar was a catalyst, but a rich, haughty city fallen from grace was the necessary chrysalis for this transformation of the obsidians to their former selves. Where else could a tribal people be nurtured with such discontent? Olympia had every opportunity to spare itself this fate. But without a shepherd, mankind cannot help but succumb to its own greed." The white surveys my face. "You are in pain. How could you, of all people, look down and wonder how they can do this to a city they uplifted? Fear made Olympia polite, Mr. Horn. But when they realized there was nothing to fear due to Sephi's manners, they partook in incremental predation on the obsidians. A Hyperionian should know. A city is a thief, designed in every facet to part coin from purse. The only difference is it smiles when it does it. Did Olympians thank the obsidians for 10 years of frontline horror? For their generosity in pouring capital into the rebuilding of their city? No, no. They gouged them in shops, cheated them in casinos,
mocked their race, and then, after all that, turned on them in an instant and chose the Republic that could not even put food in their mouths, and a hero who abandoned them for the corps. What greater insult is there? The question is not how could they do this, it is why did they not do it sooner? Because Seffi was a decent woman. No, she was remarkable, as are you, but she was crushed under the guilt of being seen as the voice of the man she admired, when really she barely knew him much at all. She let her past overrule her nature, as do you. Why? I ignore the white until those pale hands grab my scarab skin. Why? Because we're something you'll never be, shithead. Human. The reply breaks something inside the white. Xenophon turns away, wounded. I activate the power switch Pax put in the heart spike. I want to speak to Far. Why? That, dear arsehole, is between me and the ogre. Very well. Taking his heart controller in hand, Xenophon brushes past me. I turn at the last second and release the heart spike into his pocket. He leads me past Far's guards. We wait for the man to finish picking a pink for his harem. He waves us forward in amusement as the terrified girl is dragged away. Salve, Xenophon, he says with a smile. I see my heir's guardian returned. He notices the cuffs. Not as friend, it seems. Still, he protected her from the savagery of the Heatlands. It is no good for him to be on a leash. He motions for his men to remove the cuffs. He is a substantially dangerous man, Xenophon warns, despite his size. Volson considers me. So, I have heard. His men unshackle me. Cheers, old boy, I say to Far with a wide smile. I rub my raw wrists and eye the weapons on the Azkamani. I wouldn't make it halfway through a lunge. There's no other way. It's not a great decision, not the sum of my life, as I thought of Trigg's death. It's a small choice to simply say, fuck you. Is my heir alive? I frown. Didn't you kill her? I had no chance to mold Seffi. She is not my daughter. When you have so many, they matter very little. Ragnar was my first. I taught him to hunt before I was taken back to the stars. Volga will be my second. She will be like clay. I will make her in my image, so that when the time comes, she will inherit the worlds. Pity she's sunk to the bottom of the sea, then, I reply. Sloppy work, that. Should have hired me and the tits, didn't you hear? Bottom of the sea, you say? He comes down from his throne and sniffs me like a dog. Then you must be a Nurkhan, for I smell her upon you. He runs a nail along the scarab skin, leaving flakes of Seffi's blood. She dressed you in this very armor. His whiskers scratch my chin. She kissed you upon the cheek. He draws back and looks at Xenophon, lowering his voice. Does our master still wish to tame this dog? He would prove an asset. But his nature makes it decidedly unlikely, regardless the collar. The master trusts my discretion. His nature, I chuckle. Validation, after all. He is not worthy for me. Xenophon, kill him without marks. We will make it look as if his heart gave in to his depredations. When Volga comes for him, she will weep, but not hate. He
He cups his hand.
And she will be like clay.
He gives me a mocking smile.
Thank you for your service, Grey.
He climbs back on his throne to continue filling his harem as Xenophon readies the controller for my heart. Bar's beasts grip my shoulders to drag me away.
Well, aren't you a cockless little yeti, I say to Far.
His big head turns toward me.
At least have the testicular fortitude to look me in the eye as I die.
Volsung grants me that honor. His men back away as Xenophon thumbs the control and activates the kill switch. I glance over at the white. Xenophon frowns when I don't fall to the ground from heart failure.
Hey, Milky, you like riddles? What do you call a piece of shit with a bomb in his pocket?
I unzip the front of my scarab skin to show the scar Electra left.
Oops.
Xenophon frowns and looks down the sleeve.
Oh.
Xenophon disintegrates as the signal to the heart spike in his pocket activates the explosives packs wrapped around it. The heat hits me before the roar. The world turns over as I'm thrown like a rag doll. I can hear nothing. My whole body is cold. My right eye sees washed out images, my left eye nothing. Half-melted men stumble around me, screaming soundlessly. Smoke twirls up into the blue sky. My spine is broken. My legs don't work. My right arm gone. I'm cold, but afraid. But not as afraid as the first day at the Ludus. The most afraid I've been in all my life was seeing those cold halls and colder boys and lying down to bunk. I don't have to go back there ever again. I feel the metal of Trigg's ring on my finger, the warmth of warm water, the sound of it lapping against a raft. Soon, it will be the starry sky, and we will lie beside each other forever. Bar is dead. Volga is safe. Good luck, Snowball. I stare up at the sun and wait for it to darken. Then a shadow eclipses it. No. No. No! Half the monster's face is melted to the bone, baring his bottom teeth. His nose is gone. The iron crown melted to ruin and steaming, fused with his hairless skull. He looks into my eyes. And I see the abyss in his as he laughs at the pain. I moan something in fear. There's a lurch, a sudden pressure in my chest. He pulls away, his hand holding something red as he mouths the word dead to my ears.
Worthy.
Then he takes a bite of my heart.
Part 4. Pride. The world is a maze without a center. Become it, or be forever lost. Selenius Auloon, Selenius's Meditations, 25 PCE. Chapter 78. Lysander, a Visitor. It is time. After days of waiting for others to enact my will, the hour fast approaches for my own flesh to enter the fray. Glerastes has informed me that Darrow's departure is imminent, as is Atalantia's attack. Somewhere out beyond the mountains, her bombers fueled to deliver their payloads. It is now, or doomsday.
"The dinner is prepared, Dominus,"
Exeter says to me as I close the book of Shelley's poems and rise from the orchard bench. It is late afternoon, and the songbirds have begun to croon for night. Rising guards patrol the fringes of the estate, looking at the sky, not knowing that the attack will come from within. I smile at a mismatched pair of guards as I fall in step with Exeter along the gravel path, back to the house's southern portico. The pale man gives no sign of his week's labour. He has been busy on my behalf. While it would have been easier to negotiate the compliance of Glorastis's wary loyalists in person, instead of through a proxy, it would have exposed us to dangerous levels of scrutiny. I dare not tempt fate by playing more games than necessary with Darrow. Soon I'll be rid of the spike. Until then, the perfect libertine I have remained. The dining table is set for two. Glorastis and I make idle banter of the predictable sort, but it is peculiar seeing him smiling across from me, when inside I know he is churning with fear and doubt. Neither my friend nor I have much appetite, so it is a relief when the servants take away the barely touched remains of our dinner. Glorastis stands. "I must return to the spaceport. Be a good boy and see me off." At the boarding stairs to his shuttle, I smile at the old man. "You know what they say about you?" I ask. "My boy, you should know I haven't the faintest care." "You found Heliopolis a city for men, and made it a city for gods." He snorts. "If there are gods, they are in brighter worlds than these." He has little appetite for banter. He knows the dangers of the path I have chosen to walk, and he doubts me because the old do not remember the necessities of youth. They see only the years